Welcome, everybody, to Cycle Jerks Podcast, episode 112. We're excited today to be joined by Dutch Diesel coaching Eric Hoffman and his star pupil, Aaron Foy. So along with myself and Dave Dalton, welcome to the podcast.
This is like you're an outcast, Mike. You're in Livermore. We're all in Danville.
It's my life goal to get to Danville. Ended up a little short. But Danville's a great place to live. No two ways about it.
And a great place.
All right, so let's get started with the Diesel himself, Eric. I'm really fascinated with the arc of, like, I remember you coaching high school kids, I believe it was, or younger kids, and then I get on Zwift, and there's this whole Dutch Diesel thing happening, and I was just like, wow, okay, I wonder if that's the same guy. And then it was clearly, it is, because the branding, you got your kits, it's a very well composed brand that you've built. Can you just kind of explain what was your initial motivation and how you got to where you're at today?
Well, yeah, it's a long story, but let me just kind of start at the beginning, right? So when Dave and I were racing, I got the nickname of Dutch Diesel, right? And so I've always kind of had this dream, if you call it a dream, of ultimately doing some cycling tours, which is just really hard to start because there are so many big, companies that are already doing it. You need to have a lot of infrastructure, you know, like cars and people to accomplish that. But that's kind of like, I was always playing with that thought of doing something like that. And what would the name be, right? And so at one point in time, we came up with, well, Dutch Diesel Cycling, that would be, a great name for something like that. So then then Dave had a shop. He, started learning about your crew and how they were doing custom kits. And so, like, well, I want one with Dutch Diesel Cycling. And so then when I had that, I was like, well, now I need something behind it, because otherwise it's kind of funny to ride around in your kit with Dutch Diesel Cycling on it, right? Yeah. And anyway, so I was doing a lot of soccer coaching at that point in time. And so my son started mountain biking, or we both started kind of like riding mountain bikes. And I thought, like, how great would it be if I can kind of give back to the community for cycling, right? And get kids involved, you know, being outdoors, riding mountain bikes. And so that's kind of where I started doing my Saturday clinics. And I'm not a mountain biker, but, you know, for me, it was just more getting kids out there and teaching them the basics, right? And so I did that probably for a year and a half, but then, you know, got so busy with soccer coaching and cycling and doing the mountain bike clinics that I kind of had to let that go a little bit. And then I had a friend of the shop reached out to me and say, like, hey, would you want to coach me, right? And so I was obviously willing to do that based upon the experience that we had from our racing days. But I also wanted to kind of have some credentials, right? So that's where I kind of started reading up more and getting my USA Cycling Level 3 credentials to, have something. I wanted to do it the right way, right? And yeah. So, and from there, this kind of started growing, right? The Zwift thing started more, again, time constraints, right? Like, I was doing soccer coaching. I didn't have really time to get out on the road anymore. So then I heard from a friend about, well, it was actually more funny. This friend was riding on a tropical island. And I was like, are you on vacation again? He's yeah. Like, man, this is called Zwift, right? So anyway, so I started looking into it. And I was like, well, that's perfect, right? I mean, time constrained, I can do it in the garage. And then back then, there were no organized rides yet. Like, everything was going through a Google Calendar. And I was, you know what, I'm a Clydesdale. And, I want to ride with Clydesdales, you know. So I kind of started this Clydesdale ride on Zwift and planned it on the Google Calendar. And first ride that I did, one person showed up. And from there on, it's kind of like history a little bit, right? It just started growing and growing. And during COVID, at the height, we had between 100 and 200 riders showing up, and we had six rides per week. Now it has gone down a little bit. I think we're still between 50 and 100 riders on our rides. But yeah, a whole community started developing around it, which was unexpected, but very cool.
Yeah. It's and kind of Aaron, how did you first hear of Eric, and what was your background prior to getting involved with cycling? You know, you were riding your bike, and then you got this idea, I want to get coached. And so you know, can you kind of talk about where you were as a cyclist when you signed on with Eric, and then what kind of transformation you've seen since joining him?
Sure. Yeah. So I started cycling, I think it was in 2018, February of 2018. So I haven't been riding as long as a lot of you have. And I started because I used to run. So I would run through half marathon training plans, even though I actually only ran one full half marathon. I just kept running through that. So I knew I liked to have structure. And so, yeah, I started riding actually with Dave ShopRides. His ShopRide was the very first ride I was on since, you know, middle school, when I was demoing a bike. And I decided to start riding because on Sundays I would do my long run. I would run, you know, 10 miles or whatever it is. I'd be done in a couple of hours and just sit around and wait for my husband. So I thought, why not get started with cycling rather than sitting around all day on Sunday? So did that and rode with Dave's group, the C group, for a bit. And I really was progressing there, especially after we made some friends and we would ride outside of the Sunday rides. And then COVID happened and I started doing some indoor rides, but that wasn't a lot of fun. We rode maybe once or twice a week and things just kind of fell off for a bit. So my husband told me I should try out Eric's Dames ride on Mondays. So I started doing that. And not long after I rode a few of those, Eric joined us on one of our Thursday night Diablo Junction rides. So that was the first time I met Eric. I'd heard about him, obviously, because, you know, lives a couple of miles away from me, but hadn't officially met him. And, you know, he talked to me a little bit about it while we were standing up at the ranger station taking a break. And I think it was within a day or so I signed up. And that was, I guess, a year and a half ago. Is that right? I think about a year and a half ago, 2.5 years ago. It was 2001. I'm sorry, it's 2021. So, yeah, since then, I think the consistency has helped me. I have gotten, I can see that I'm stronger. I can go farther. My goal when I signed up was really just to keep up with my husband and to, I wanted to ride with the A2 group that Dave had with his shop. That was my ultimate goal. And yeah, I feel like I've definitely made some progress there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. I can tell you, she went from C to A2. She blew right through it. It's amazing, amazing progress. So.
Okay. So you said something though, when you first started, you were waiting for your husband on Sundays. What was he doing?
He was riding with the shop.
Oh, so okay.
He had taken up cycling about 2 years before, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, sorry, I missed that detail, but yeah, he would go out on long Sunday rides and then I'd sit around after my run and decided might as well join him.
Got it. Now, Eric, I noticed, like, looking on the site, do you have right now, there's 5 diesel rides a week, it looks like, or maybe it's 4 a week and then one every other week. Are you leading all those rides or do you have other folks that are working those events for you?
Yeah. Now I have different people. So in the summer, because some of the people, you know, have kind of moved on from Zwift. So the summer schedule we do every other week, we do the Saturday ride, right? So Saturday is kind of our big group ride.
Yeah.
Then we have the Dames ride on Monday, right? Which is led by Sam. She's from Australia. Then Tuesday I'm leading. Wednesday is Mike Weplow. He lives in Southern California. And then Saturday, we kind of rotate. And so myself, you know, I've been more you know, got a little burned out a little bit on Zwift. You know, I was doing it a lot. I'm enjoying the outside riding. So, you know, I haven't been leading any Saturday rides as of lately. So Mike has been carrying that burden. So there's some people that help me from Oregon, but they're more winter time, right? In the summer, they're out on the road.
Right.
So I have multiple people from over the United States and Australia that are helping me out leading these rides, because otherwise it would be impossible to.
Right. I was thinking, how are you doing all these rides and then also leading, you know, Zwift rides and doing outside rides?
If you just want to look at the impact of Eric on Zwift, because it is incredible. Yeah. I mean, just look behind him. You know,
yeah.
Pick up the phone, Mike, and call Zwift and see if you can get a climber jersey like on Zwift. You're not going to get it, right?
Yeah.
Eric's got his own kit on there, right? I mean, that's incredible. And that's just an indication of the impact.
Well, so. you know, what's interesting is I've led some Zwift rides also, or I shouldn't say led, but I work for Giant. They have the AHDR rides, right? And there's a Tuesday and a Wednesday one. And I would, I was a ride leader on the Wednesday ride. And what I found, it's interesting because like some of the other ride leaders, I noticed like they're all in with Zwift all the time. Whereas like for me, it's like in the winter, sure, you know, but man, when the sun's out, are you kidding me? I'm going to sit on that trainer. No way. I'm going to be outside, you know?
Right.
So, it's interesting how people kind of settle into like, they just get to Aaron's point about structure, you know, they get the structure set up on Zwift, and then that just becomes, that's how they're a cyclist. Whereas I think probably climate has a lot to do with it too, but, I know that all parts of the country do get sun, but I noticed like some of my other ride leaders from the AHDR group, they're riding Zwift all summer long. They're just doing a lot of Zwift miles. And it's just kind of interesting dynamic.
I think Eric touched on it before, right? I mean, he at a time was a definition of a time crunch cyclist, right? A good dad, a good job, raising kids, coaching, and doing all that other stuff. And so, I mean, we are different in the sense that we don't have any kids, right? So that we could take that off the plate. But listen, having lived on the East Coast, you're talking about 3 months out of the year that you know, unless you're insane and ready to bundle up, the weather sucks. You know, if I lived in where I grew up, upstate New York, I'd be on Zwift all the time. I've been there.
Well, and there's other elements too, right? Like I've met several people that have been in accidents on their bike. You know, they're living in areas where it's just more, you know, there's risk always, right? But where it's just dangerous to be out on the road, and they are just choosing to do indoor. For me, besides the whole time crunch, and it's easy to jump on your bike. I mean, it saves you probably like a half an hour to 45 minutes to ride indoors versus going outdoors.
Yeah.
I think the combination of structured training and outdoor riding is key. I mean, I remember, you know, we with 615, you know, when we were racing, right, we would do intervals at night, right, in the darkness with lights on, right? So that's not necessarily safe. Then you're doing your interval and there's a stop sign or there's a stoplight, or the road goes up, the road goes down. So it's very hard to be efficient and hit the prescribed workout targets on the road. And that's where I think all these indoor platforms come into play, right? You know, the trainer roads, the Zwifts. What I like about Zwift is that the group aspect, right? I've done group workouts for a while. They just have certain capabilities and features which really accommodate for what I call entertainment, right? I mean, I've done before Zwifts and all these things, the rollers in the garage, you know, try to look at a like movie, you know, on an iPad. It's just mind numbing. 15 minutes would be horrible. And I would Zwift, You know, we have done a couple of years where we did the 100 miler, right? So you're sitting on a bike in the garage for like 5+ hours. And so that to me is the power of Zwift, you know, the entertainment factor of it.
Yeah, it's a huge component. Aaron, let me ask you, so in the summer, are you finding yourself on Zwift or are you like the rest of us where it's like, boy, sun's out, we're going outside?
Well, I do whatever Eric tells me in Training Peaks.
Wow,
isn't that where the star people come?
Yeah. Exactly.
I will say, though, that Eric added during the summer that we would do 2 rides on Zwift and then the Thursday ride to the junction, so the climbing day, and then the long ride on Saturday. And I guess it was a month and a half, 2 months ago, Eric, you added a Monday outdoor ride. And so that's helped quite a bit. I love that ride. I love that we're outside another day of the week. So right now it's just one day in the garage on the trainer.
Okay.
And then, you know, it'll flip back. It'll be 3 days inside and one day outside once we get into the winter.
So, yeah, Eric, to your point, I mean, I was a young racer at one point in my life. And I remember the first off season where I did like heavy trainer work. And I was working at a bike shop, and we would go in the bike shop. There was 3 of us on the team, and we would go in there and we'd just blast the radio, and we would sit on the torture device and just kill ourselves for an hour.
Right.
And we did that all summer long. And we were just young and enthusiastic and didn't really have any direction, but we just wanted to get faster. We knew we wanted to do better at the early bird crits, you know, next spring.
Right.
And after that, by the time spring rolled around, I was so, I don't know, it just, my headspace wasn't right. It's almost like I didn't even care anymore. Like it had turned something that I loved into something that I was just doing because I had this goal, but I lost the love of riding. And even when the spring came around, I just didn't have the enthusiasm that I had the year before. And I was really, I kind of swore the trainer off after that season. And then, fast forward, 40 years later, I get on Zwift and the entertainment, having someone to chase, having someone pass you, having the group dynamic, the structured training. Let's say if you got a 12-week, I'm kind of the, and I'd be interested to know what you think about this. I'm kind of the mindset, stay ready, don't get ready, right? I just want to be ready. So if I decide next week I'm going to go do the Tour de Kaiser or whatever, I want to be ready for that. I don't want to have to do an 8 to 12 week block to get ready for it.
Right.
But yeah, so and Zwift really helps you with that because they do have those 6 week, the 8 week, the 12 week, whatever. If you're someone who kind of goes in and out of cycling or fitness and you want to circle some of these events on your calendar, then it can really help you. And so there's so many layers to it. I think that if you're someone who enjoys cycling at all, you're going to be able to get on there, improve, and also be entertained. And the entertaining part is the one thing to me that's just really makes it, far more enjoyable. And
right. Well, and this is the risk, right? And so you mentioned it, and Aaron kind of mentioned it. What I always try to look at is we all want to train. We all want to become better or to meet a goal that we are setting. The risk that's always lurking is that it becomes work, right? Especially when you're going to do serious training, right? And not just riding out there just to be out there. There's a risk that it becomes work, and that's what you need to balance, right? And hence me kind of introducing now like a Monday outdoor ride, because I know the winter is going to come and we're all going to be indoor. So I'm trying to keep everybody, you know, fresh in their mind, right? And this is, to your point, like, you know, stay ready, right? Like that's a good thing, right? If you can balance that. But sometimes it's also good to just say, like, you know what, I'm taking a month where I still ride my bike, but you know, just for riding my bike, right? And no expectations, no nothing, or just take it all off, because you need that mental recovery too, right? Where you just take a break of all the structure, just kind of enjoy why you started cycling, you know. So that's where I think it's good to change it up and really, you know, keep listening to the folks that you are training, you know, where they are from that perspective, right? You just don't want to burn them out and things.
It's funny you say that. It usually hits me when I'm in an airport and I'm traveling either for work or something, and I'm sitting there in the airport and I'm looking at all these people that are just like getting like the double cheeseburgers and the nachos, and they're sitting at the bar at 7:30 in the morning. And I go, sometimes I just go, why do I care? Because you get up to a point where you're so burnt out, because I love to ride and I want to get out there, but waking up at that, you know, at 7:30, at 6:30 to get ready for a 9 o'clock ride, or, you know, and then always watching what I eat, you know, it mentally burns me out sometimes. And it's, right. I think we touched on it a little bit in the beginning, is I'm like many of us, is that we don't take enough time to actually just walk away and recharge mentally and physically. I think that's a huge mistake that the vast majority of us make. Just don't. Yeah. And mentally is a big part of it too, you know? So.
Yeah. I do feel like, I don't know. I don't have that, like that burnout thing. For me, like, it's gotten kind of, cycling's gotten into this, personal discipline. Right. And, that's something that, like, I made a shift at some point where, instead of evaluating, like, in the morning, am I going to get up and do this? It's now it's just like, this is what I do. And
yeah,
so,
you're
right. Yeah. And if I don't early on, I mean, I'd say probably for the last decade or so, but early on, when I was kind of changing my diet, my life, my whole approach, I would struggle with that part of it in the morning. You know, it just like, you know, get up and do this stupid thing. But I don't know, somewhere like something switched in my brain to where this is who I am, this is what I do, and I need to stay true to that. And I know, like, for myself, you know, I'm kind of I wouldn't say I'm high strung, but I have a lot of energy,
right?
And so it really helps me. My wife is polar opposite. She's not into cycling, and, you know, she can sit by our pool and read a book on a Saturday afternoon and be very content. Whoops. I cannot do that. Unless I've gone out in the morning and really hurt myself on the bike, you know what I mean? Done some big hard ride. And then I can come home and I can sit right alongside her and be at peace. But if I don't do that, I will force myself to sit on the chase next to her, and I will be just, my head is just like, oh, I got to trim this hedge, that lawn, I need to fertilize this, I need to do this. You know, I just can't relax. And so it's really helped my wife and I in a weird way, like just being able to be more on the same page when I'm not on my bike. And so, yeah, it's just everybody's wired a little bit differently. I know Dave talks about burnout. I haven't. Yeah, I mean, Mike, it's been a decade. I haven't had it yet, you know.
But hold on, let's back up, Mike. So Eric and I started riding together in, I think, 2002.
Yeah.
Right. And it's only gotten, you know, it's like, that's the, I'll never forget the day the question, when my wife said to me, when did this one day a week turn into 5 days a week? Right. You know.
Yeah.
But Mike, when I met you, when I opened the shop,
yeah,
you weren't as hardcore, right?
That's true.
I remember that.
Yeah.
And I've got the picture at the junction to show you. You are not the Mike that you are now, right? So anyone that wants to just email me, I'll send you that picture. But still, you just have to be careful that you still may be in that cycle, right? I mean,
right.
The question the question is, when it does come, how do you keep going if you love it that much? Because so that was, well, okay, and fair enough, that was 2014, right? So
yeah,
it has been, okay, it's been a decade, but you just have to
It's been a weird arc for me because of parenthood, you know. That's why Marvel, like Eric, you have you know, kids at home and doing all these other things. It's like when my kids were young, you know, I went from a serious cyclist to you know, riding maybe one day a week casually, and just totally lost my fitness. I coached him up in baseball and basketball and just threw myself in, you know, and I wasn't happy with myself and my fitness and all that, but that wasn't the goal at the time, you know. It's just, yeah, like I got these young kids and I want to be a big part of their development, and so. But then when I got back into it, in a way, it kind of like made it more special when I came back, because it's something I'd been longing to do for a long time. And you know, as the kids get older, it gets easier. And yeah.
Hey, let's explore something, right? First of all, let's be perfectly clear. Eric, you've got a couple of elite cyclists as your clients, right? So you've got guys that, or at least at some point, had some very high level cyclists racing and whatnot, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So there is a gal from Texas. She actually is Dutch by origin, right? She, you know, when I coached her, she's taking a break at the moment. But when I coached her, she made the Texas state champion for time trialing. I had a local Bay Area rider that wanted to explore the structure training and coaching. He had a goal of finishing on the podium in the Oakland crit. And unfortunately, you know, he was there, but he crashed. He was okay. But he crashed just before the finish. So that was the only thing that really stayed in his way. A Cat 4 rider. Then I didn't really coach them, Dave, but there was a whole bunch of ladies. They were track champions, you know, like in, you know, there was a world champion, national state champions. So one of them I coached for a while until they moved. So I didn't coach all these elite cyclists, but they all ended up joining the Zwift racing team, right? Mm-hmm. And they're like almost winning every single series that comes up. So yeah, there's some really strong ladies in there. Yes.
Okay, yeah. But you've definitely dabbled in that world, right? There's a reason for me asking that. So when I had the shop, it was kind of interesting to me, and it was out of ignorance to me, because power meters, when we trained, we were all heart rate, right? Because power meters were just too freaking expensive. But people would buy a bike from me and they'd go, now I want a power meter. And I'd go, why? Do you race? Do you do? And they're like, no, I just like numbers. And I'm like, you know, spend the money. I would say spend the money and go get a bike fit, because you'll A, probably generate more power, and B, ride injury free. Right. But
I love how Dave, hang on a second. I love how Dave is spending his clients' money in the way that he thinks is the right way. How about this, Dave? How about they get a power meter and they get a fit?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be one or the other. I mean, what are you doing? You're talking about a buying equipment.
Yeah.
You're a retailer. Come on.
Well, all right. Now you know I don't have a bike shop anymore. Right. So there you go. I just sucked at it. There you go.
Because, you know, Danville people really don't have any discretionary income, generally speaking. So, yeah, it's really good that you're looking out for their best interests,
right,
in that way.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. Now it explains a lot.
Uh-huh.
But anyways, the point is, at the time, in my mind, I wouldn't have thought that you're not racing, so therefore you don't need a power meter. You're not, I don't want to say serious, but a lot of Eric's client base, and this is what it's been an epiphany to me, that the, and Aaron, I apologize, but the average cyclist, right, that has no aspirations necessarily of racing and whatnot, they use a coach. And, you know, so my initial question is why, but now when, if you've seen this group of people that have progressed so much, some of the people that Eric coached, they progressed so much that, you know, I now, my perspective is different. Yeah, you better buy a power meter, you know, dummy. If I only had the shop, I'd be selling power meters out the wazoo, right? And by the same token, I'd be looking at your average person and say, what are your goals? Is it to lose weight? Is it to, I have an event coming. The death ride was a big motivator, I think, for some of these guys. You should go, you know, there are reasons why, there are reasons why the average cyclist should have a coach, right? And the benefits that can come out of that, whether it be keeping up with your husband, whether it be finishing a death ride, doing your first century, losing weight, whatever the case may be. And Eric and Aaron, feel free to comment on that. But that's, it's been watching this group that Eric coaches progress has been a real epiphany for me, right? So.
Yeah, I think we kind of went through the same thing, right, Dave? We were riding hard, you know, every Saturday, but we didn't really understand what we were doing until Scott kind of took us under his wing and says, like, hey, I've been reading this book, and he kind of set up a training plan for us. I remember that year we all got together at his house and started talking about that. And I think that, to me, is key, right? So if you think about, so everybody wants to work out, exercise to stay healthy, right? And then you find something that you really like doing, and then you want to be better at it, right? And but there's so much science behind all this stuff. I mean, I reread things because it just gets so complex. Yeah. And if you have to do that yourself, it just becomes a whole other job on the side to really understand it. And so you can now spend many, many hours on your bicycle and actually, you know, get not getting better, but you get worse because you just don't know how to approach it. Right. So I think that could be a reason for a coach. Right. So you don't have to deal with it. You just do what the coach kind of prescribes. And so then you start seeing your progress. Right. It could be just simple accountability. Right. Like, I want to get better, but I need to have something that keeps me accountable. Right. Like I need to have somebody to create a calendar with the structure that I can follow. And then, of course, yeah, the goals there too, right? Like, I want to do this particular ride, and how do I get there, right? Like, how do I set up my training plan? I don't know how to do that. So those are all reasons for me where you can say, like, I'll get a coach.
Right. Does the coaching involve nutrition?
Yes, I do. I'm not a nutritionist, but I do read about it, and I do understand how critical it is. Aaron can confirm, but I talk about it on our rides, right? Like, it's such a huge difference, and you need to train eating on the bike too, right? If you just say, like, you know, I do whatever, and then the event comes and you're super focused on it, your body might object, right? Because your gut is just not used to processing all that food, and it's a major difference. So I have a kind of a rule of thumb, and then it gets more complex. I kind of got this from Lawrence and them, right? So if you go for a ride longer than 2 hours, you should be eating starting hour number one, right? Depending on the intensity, you should intake more carbs than you do when the intensity is lower. I have this rule of thumb. It's like 50 grams of carbs each hour. So you can put that in your bottle. The easiest thing for me, and this is what I got from Lawrence and them, the shot block, each pack is 50 grams, right? So I just, you know, cut open a few in the morning already, so I know I'm going to eat them. And I just monitor that, like, from hour one. So that's as much as nutritional advice that I'm giving. Nutritionist, that's a whole different ball game, right? So I give advice, but it's not from a nutritionist expertise, so to speak.
Well, you know, to your point about it being confusing, and there's a lot of different, you know, we've been doing this podcast now for more than 2 years, and we've had people on. We had Yuri from Goo. We've had Steve from Hammer, and then also various other guests that we'll talk about nutrition. And then you go online, you look at it. It's almost like there's so many different camps. It's like if you look up dieting, you know, you got the meat eaters, you got the vegans, and then everybody in between, the keto. There's just so much conflicting information out there. It is really hard to navigate. And yeah, I mean, I don't know, for myself, I just kind of like I got something that's kind of working here. I'm just going to keep kind of tweaking things. And I'm not really going to dive into all the stuff that you can read about, because I did try something recently. The idea of drinking your calories, right? As opposed to just eating. I've always used bars. I like bars. And I'll have chews here and there, but whatever. But I started trying to drink my calories. Like Goo has that Roctane, 230 calories a bottle. And so I tried that, and I, you know, I'm still working with that. But like my first go of it, I had a episode that I hadn't had in years, where I just kind of bonked out, and it was a hot day and a big ride. But I do that all the time. And I had a really adverse reaction to trying to do this other thing. And, so anyway, I'm not giving up on that Roctane, cause I want to try to make it work, but I'm trying different add-ins to it. But yeah, nutrition, like training, you know, there's a lot of different philosophies out there.
Absolutely. Even with the types of training plans, there's so many, you know, advocates of one versus the other.
Yep.
I think ultimately it's a mix, and it is based upon the individual. You know, this is, to me, again, to Dave's question, like, why a coach, right? You know, if you see the progression of the industry, right, you start talking about artificial intelligence, right? Like, where basically machine learning is looking at, you know, what you're doing on the bike, and start recommending what to do next. All these things are great. I believe in data. Believe me, I'm like, love WKO. I take a lot of information out of the power data, heart rate data. But ultimately, you need to include the individual. And that's not just like the individual checking a box like, oh, this was a hard ride. There's more to it, right? Like we talked about, you need to try to understand what's in their head. Like, are they getting burned out? You know, you're bringing up nutrition, all these type of things. That's just the nuance difference to having still a human, you know, prescribing your workouts versus just all machine.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let's touch on that with Aaron. Aaron, I want to go back to you using Eric, but while we're on nutrition, you're a vegetarian, right?
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. I ask like it's a question. I have to listen to Patrick bitch about it all the time, but that's fine.
Of course.
So I actually knew the answer to that. But when have you been vegetarian since I've known you, or did you make that switch?
Oh, no. Yeah. I've been vegetarian for 14 years.
Oh, so goodness. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we can't ask whether we've seen how it impacts the cycling at all, because it's just what you've done, right?
It is what I've done, but I have had to adjust what I eat ahead of time. And I also learned, well, I've kind of gone back and forth. When I ran, my thing was a couple hours before I would go out on a run, I'd eat a bowl of oatmeal, because oatmeal kind of sticks with you and it's got the carbs. And so that just seemed to work well when I ran. When I first started cycling, that didn't seem to work as well for me. And somebody suggested, well, maybe you need more protein in the morning to just help you out on these longer rides. So I switched, and that person suggested I try a scrambled egg in the morning. So I tried that. And my thing for a long time was a scrambled egg and a piece of toast with peanut butter. Mm-hmm. But what I've done since then, and I think I switched probably about 10 months or so ago. I heard Eric actually talking about what he ate before riding, And he said he had basically a peanut butter sandwich before. I think your words, Eric, were you slap some peanut butter on two slices of bread and then stick it together. And that's what you eat before a ride. Right. And it got me thinking, like, Eric's a lot bigger than I am. I'm not a very big person. And if that's all he eats before riding, why am I eating so much? Because at that point I'd progressed to two scrambled eggs and a piece of toast with a peanut butter. So I actually started experimenting to your point, and I started eating an English muffin with peanut butter. That wasn't quite enough because, and Dave, we were on a ride one time when you were talking about this, the liquid calories that you were just talking about, and also not eating as much before, but that doesn't seem to work for me. I need to eat a little bit more. So I actually, at this point, I played around with it. Like I would eat some oatmeal and like healthier type of oatmeal, and then an English muffin with peanut butter. Now I'm at the point, because I read that, you know, the instant oatmeal, the Quaker instant oatmeal, is terrible for you on a regular basis because it's got so much sugar, right? But that's I specifically read that's good before a ride because it's easier to digest and get that energy. So I'm at the point now where I eat that. And then I went back and forth between a half of the English muffin with peanut butter or a full, and I space it out. So it for me, it's just been experimenting. So it's kind of been back and forth what I do and don't eat. But I've learned that the carbs ahead of time instead of the eggs definitely works better for me.
So, yeah, I'm not the nutritionist, but there's something with fats. So it's all about your glycogen storages, right? In your muscles and your mitochondria, and that you need to keep those topped off. And that's why you eat consistently when you're on the bike, right? You need to replenish that with the carbs. I think, and this is where we're going to the nutritionist piece, I think the way the liver does all this stuff, fats actually are not helping with that processing. So don't quote me on this. I think that's what I read. So that could be why you experienced that,
Well, you know, we had Steve from Hammer on, and he is an absolute clinic on nutrition. He lives it. It's his world. And Dave and I have different approaches in the morning. So Dave, I mean, I'd rather sleep. Dave wants to eat before he rides. And Steve was saying that if you're going to eat, you need 3 hours for that, for your body to digest all that food. Or when you get on the bike, your energy is going to digesting. It's divert, you know, you're diverting the energy of digesting the food and trying to ride your bike. And it's not the best scenario. So like, I've always been the person that gets up, I'd rather sleep. Dave gets up 3 hours before so he can eat and then do this whole cycle of digestion. And then he gets on his bike. I'm more like, I'm going to sleep all the way to the, and then I'm just going to hop up, get on my bike and go. And then Steve was saying about 40, instead of waiting an hour, maybe 45 minutes into the ride, start fueling up.
Right.
And so, curious, Aaron, you've already answered it. So Eric, you're eating before you ride? And if so, about how long before you ride?
Hour to an hour and a half. And as Aaron was saying, right, I just take two slices of whole wheat bread and I put peanut butter and butter on it. And that's what I eat, like, again, hour to an hour and a half. And then when I ride, I start immediately that first hour. And then I have, you know, 50 grams of carbs in each bottle. And then I use the, so I plan, okay, if I'm riding 4 hours, I will have four strips of, the chews,
mm-hmm.
right? The shot blocks type of stuff. And I consistently eat that. I just check myself every hour, you know, like, where's my bottle and how many of these shot blocks did I take? And again, right, it's just a rule of thumb. 50 grams at this intensity seems to be working for me. If the intensity is higher, then you have to do, you know, more grams of carbs each hour. But that's kind of like how I manage it. And I really started it only last year to really pay attention to it and tell people, like, you need to train eating too on the bike. And it's making a difference, the way you feel at the end of a ride versus not eating enough.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially people that think, well, I'm going to ride to lose weight, right? So they don't eat while they're on the ride or and whatnot. It's just, that's just it, you just don't diet on the bike. You've got to.
You shouldn't. So the thing is, if you want to really lose weight, you should do it in the off season. And off season, I'm meaning like when you're not really riding a lot, because you need to eat carbs, because that's what people do, right? I want to diet. I'm taking carbs out of my diet. And that's what you need. That's what you need to restore all your glycogen storages in your mitochondria, which you need, especially when you're riding in these mid zones, right? Like close to FTP, zone 3, zone 4 type of stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Let's come back to those numbers, but I had a second question for Aaron, right? So, because I think Eric, if you could, for our audience, maybe give us some basic definitions before we go about FTP versus VO2 and what the zones are, but so Aaron, you started this whole thing was ride with my husband, move to A2, be able to keep up with my husband. Now that you're so much stronger than Patrick, I'm having fun.
Patrick's not here.
He's not even here. Exactly.
Yeah, right.
But he will listen. So, but what keeps you going then? I mean, what keeps you going and sticking to a plan? Is it a function of structure? Is it you have another goal? What?
Yes, it's the structure for sure. Do I have another goal? It's the same goal. To be honest with you, it's the exact same goal. And
yeah,
I said from the beginning, I wanted to ride with this group, and specifically these guys. They're the group that we ride with on the weekends and throughout the week. It's a really great group, really supportive. I am the only woman. But I have a lot of fun with them. So they make it fun, but they also make it challenging. And when I first started riding with Eric, and then we had, this death ride training thing that we did, and I wasn't planning on riding the death ride originally, but I wanted to ride with the group, and this group was training for the death ride. So, I did that, and they were all training with Eric, and now they're all still training with Eric. So originally it was, hey, if I'm training with Eric and the rest of these guys are not, that's just going to help me even more. And now pretty much everybody's training with Eric, which is great, but that's just like the bar just keeps getting higher for me. So, and I just enjoy it in general. So I don't have any plans of stopping.
Yeah.
I think I think we need to put this in perspective, because I think we're using terms here that people that weren't associated with my shop wouldn't understand. But when I started these group rides, right, this is when we talked a long time ago, but my group rides were A1, A2, B, and C group, right? And so it was 55 miles was the A1, 55 mile, but fast, 55 miles, fast, but not as fast for the A2, about 45 for the B, and the C group was targeted at about 30 miles. So my reason for going through that is the vast majority of these guys were A2. So 55 was not hard, but they just weren't as fast as some of the local racer cats, right? So I bring that up because that's just a testament, I think, to Erin's progression. She was a C rider, very content at 30 miles and did real well. And now I've ridden with this group and 55, 60, 100. It's these guys are strong at those distances. So I think it's a testament to going from C to the A2, if you will, but a testament to the whole group itself, because again, I did the death ride with these guys. Is amazing what they accomplished, but even on a typical Saturday, for them to bang out 65 miles is incredible to ride with them. So
Aaron, do you have any aspirations to ever race, or is it just more of a personal journey on fitness and staying active and at this level?
Yeah, no, I don't have any aspirations or desire to race. No, that looks really scary to me. When I watch people in the group, I can't imagine racing. So, you know, this is challenging for me and I enjoy it. And I'm just going to stay where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
With my training plan.
Yeah. It's interesting because I know that a lot of people's motivation usually will stem around a particular event or the goal of racing, moving up a category or what have you. I'm kind of in a similar lane. Like I don't necessarily, I don't circle any races on the calendar. I'm not someone who wants to necessarily, I did a ton of racing, but at this stage of the game, I don't know. I'll race occasionally, maybe a couple times a year, but it's not my motivation at all. So it's nice to meet somebody similar in that. Yeah,
exactly.
Everybody else you're talking to, oh, I got this race next week. I'm going to Cats Hill. I'm doing this, whatever it is, you know. But I know road racing anyway, this area is really struggling with road racing. So even if that was your goal, it'd be pretty challenging right now with they're having to cancel a lot of races because they're not getting the turnout. We had the guy
COVID
from
Change the World.
Bello Promo on, and he was saying that, you know, it's just been a real struggle, you know, to get enough people to do these events. So kind of a bummer. Mm-hmm. But all right, well, if you don't mind, Eric, why I have you, I do. So I worked with a guy who was a multi-time, he's a world champion at one level, and then he was also he's a two-time world record holder on the track for masters. He's got two different age categories where he's the world record holder. And his name's Keith Ketterer. And when I first started, probably about the same time Dave and I started working together, I told him, I said, hey, you know, Keith, I want to get back in, you know, and he gave me like this very kind of, he goes, look, he's a coach also. He says, I'll give you something that's really basic and you could use this the rest of your cycling career, or you could take things up a notch, but this will work for you. So what he did, we had Monday, Wednesday were easy days. Tuesday, Thursday was intervals. And then Saturday was long, slow distance, recover on Sunday. So, I used that for maybe the first year or so, maybe 2 years, I would say. I was pretty, pretty good with that. But to your point about how I've also been riding with people that have a coach and they'll be like, oh, my coach is going to kill me for this ride, you know, because it's out of the structure of their program. And they, you know, and that was one of the things that as a rep, I travel around, I have all these accounts. I like to ride with people, different people. So it was hard sticking to this very specific schedule. And I found myself at the beginning, I was being like, oh, I can't ride with you on Tuesday. Sorry. No, I got to do intervals on Tuesday. You know, and it's like, what am I doing here? You know, I'm not some pro athlete. I should be able to just go ride with somebody, you know? So I quickly ditched that and then kind of settled in on this, you know, settled in on just being way more random about stuff, but still putting in lots of volume. So can you talk about the pitfalls of, you know, being random as opposed to staying to that structured routine?
Yeah, I think if you're when you say random, you're just doing whatever, right? Like you join group rides and you're just kind of following what that group is doing.
Yes.
You're not structured. You are not looking at what you're doing. And the risk is that you're constantly at too high of an intensity. And too high of an intensity, you know, can lead to overtraining and basically too much fatigue. And then you actually start going backwards. Now, mm-hmm. To your other point, I've also heard about these coaches that are going, you know, get really upset when they don't do exactly what they're doing. So when you would join, if you join me as a client, the first thing that I do is try to figure out a schedule that's working for you, right? So I'm not going to plan your week based upon what I think should be the best. I'm planning the week on what I think works for you, because if it's not going to work for you, it's going to come work, burnout, blah, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
So the second part to it is, like, if you don't give an element to the training plan where you can enjoy riding, right? So, and what I mean by that is, like, you kind of do what the group does, right? Then you're also going to have a risk of burnout. So I don't believe in, and Erin is great with compliance, right? I mean, she really is doing, you know, what is prescribed for that week. But, you know, if there's a ride in there where, or a week in there where she have more TSS or a little bit less TSS, it's okay. But if it structurally becomes like not following a plan, then, you know, that's not okay either. But yeah, I don't believe that if you go over or under one time, you know, we need to get upset. It's just a matter of, okay, that it just happened because of whatever reasons, right? And but again, like, to look out for, it shouldn't structurally become like that, if that makes sense, right? Yeah. Because then we're not training anymore. Then we're just doing randomly what you were saying.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I struggle with it. I think, you know, when I'm at home, I can have this really structured kind of thing. But then mm-hmm. I travel, I stay overnight, you know, so maybe sometimes two or three nights. I have one bike with me. I usually end up taking the gravel bike because it's the most versatile. I can do dirt or I can go road. And the road efforts just end up like hanging on to the road group. You know, I'm just pack fodder, but it's a good workout. And then I can go ride the next day. I can go ride mountain or with somebody else, you know? So yeah, I struggle with the structure. Yeah.
It is hard, and that's why, you know, the workouts themselves are not always the best to do in a group, because, you know, there's too many factors why the group is different, right? I mean, again, if I go back to training with Dave in the group, right? I mean, for me to stay uphill, I needed to do much higher of an effort than they would have to do. So I was doing more than what was on the plan for that day. And it's hard to just say, like, well, I will just pedal a little slower, right? Because that's the competitiveness in us.
Yeah.
But that's really what you need to do. If you listen to how the pros are training, right? So they, first of all, they split their groups, right? So if you're on a pro team and they do a certain workout for a day, they split the group. They put the sprinters together, the climbers together, whatever the mix of the rider is. And they call it system, but, you know, everybody gets their turn in the front of the group to really get their time in the zone, right? That they planning for that day. And if you're too long pulling, the person next in line gets upset with you and they yell system, because now it's their turn to get their training stress in. And really, if you want to structure training with a group, you need to go to that level. Otherwise, I think you're doing random stuff, right? Like the best thing then to do, and that's what we're doing on Saturday, look at the intensity factor, right? At the end of the ride, we want the intensity factor to be equal to tempo. So some people will get there and they're like a little bit over at a certain point in time, and then later on they're like under, right? And so it balances it out from a normalized power perspective. But yeah, it's hard to really structure training a group because there's so many variables.
Yeah. All right.
Mike, one of the things that I think that you and I are missing because of this is, I mean, you certainly are at a different level than you ever were when I rode with you. I believe that I've gone backwards, and I think I've gone backwards because what I don't know is what could be. Like you think you're riding great, but what if you did recover a little bit more? What if you didn't do your diesel laps, right? Where would you be if you did? And I think that's what's missing with the structure. Without structure, is we ride given the situation. I'm out today, I'm doing this particular ride, is really fast, I'm just going, right? And the next day I'm on with a slower group, I'm just going. But there's really no method to our madness. And what I think we're missing there is what ultimately is the potential, right? Because there isn't a structure. So we think we're riding great, and you are riding great, but I think
it gets into, and I really struggle with this because, you know, I like to climb hills. That's an understatement. That's my jam. And So there was a period where I knew that like the all the climbing was not benefiting my intensity. And I was showing up to races having already done 25,000 feet that week. And then I'd show up on that Saturday and try to do 125 mile, you know, 10,000 foot race or whatever. And I was okay. I did fine. You know, I did fine. In some cases, sometimes I did great. Other times it was like, I'll take it. I'm happy with my effort. But I think the what it gets back to, and I struggled with that for a long time. I was just like, you know, what am I doing? I should be tapering before a big event, and I should be doing all this other stuff. And I just like, but that's not my goal. My goal isn't to go, win races. My goal is to have fun on my bike and to challenge myself and to have that discipline. I think what Aaron talks about, structure, discipline, whatever you want to call it. I set these goals for elevation gain for the year. And then I just work towards those goals every week. And that keeps me motivated. And I'm not like Dave's really, I know Dave really beats himself up because he's like, oh, I just don't have it. I'm not going faster and this and that. And whereas like, I don't know. I'm not worried about racing. Dave's a little bit more into racing than I am. You know, I think he puts more stock into racing than I do. But I think it's okay if you find your lane like Aaron has. She doesn't want to race. She just wants to be a accomplished, competent cyclist that can ride with her group at a high level. And so I think the goals for everybody are different when it comes to cycling, right? There's weight loss, there's fitness, there's I want to be a Cat 2 or a Cat 1. I want to dominate masters, or I want to fit in with my group ride and be competent. And, or you want to hit some crazy elevation goal or some crazy mileage goal that you set for yourself. With that in mind, what's the optimal, rest days for somebody that's a psychopath that wants to ride 7 days a week? They probably shouldn't, but, Aaron, let me ask you, how many rest days do you take a week?
Three
rest days.
Yes.
Okay. Fantastic. How about you, Eric?
Define a rest day. Are you literally all off the bike, or are you completely off the bike, or is it a recovery in that you're just riding slow?
Completely off the bike for 3 days. Last year, I mean, Eric can talk about this. Last year, the last 2 years with him, it was 5 days on and 2 days off. And this year, he switched it to 4 days with higher intensity and 3 days off, which I really appreciate because I work and, you know, have life outside of it. But yeah, I'm totally off. I'm supposed to stretch. I know Eric always has stretch, but I've never done that.
Oh, no.
Nobody.
There we go.
Okay, good. I don't feel as bad then.
Oh, I'm a stretcher, Eric. So if I sign up for some coaching, you'll be happy with my stretching.
Good.
Yeah, I have to stretch. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
All right. So compare and contrast, Mike. How often are you off the bike?
Maybe one day a week, I would say. It's kind of gotten into Mondays and now become my rest day. But last week, I didn't ride on Friday because of travel. I was on the car for 4.5 hours. But, you know, I should have still rode that day. Is how my mind works, because the car is brutal. And I got out of that car when I finally pulled in the driveway, and my back, my lower back and my, you know, it just, everything just felt terrible. Whereas I think if I would have stopped, spun the pedals for an hour and a half or something, and then, you know, granted I'd be home that much later, which is not great for trying to stay married. But, you know, I feel like I would have been in a better position physically when I got home. I don't know if I've just convinced myself of these things because I have a mental illness, or if in fact, you know, getting that blood, you know, I know like there's been times where I've been injured and I've been forced to sit around for a couple of days, and my back and I just don't feel good at all. I just feel really bad. And that's where the Zwift really helped. I had a rotator cuff thing this the past winter, and I was able to ride the Zwift. And it just totally changed the whole dynamic for me in terms of being injured. I was still able to get that workout in and feel better and And yeah, so I don't know, Eric. So what, how many days off do you take?
I think I'm also at three. Yeah, 3 days. To be honest, my structure has been not that great for the last 2 years. I've heard before when you start coaching, like it's kind of like you become, the last in line to pay attention to. So after the death, right, I'm sort of kind of taking a break. I'm still, maintaining, right? So I do my workouts and all these type of things. So I think I'm at 3 days, but really, again, it's based upon the individual, right? So there's your goal. So we know kind of what we need to train to make your goal, right? Then there is the training stress, or then it's the time available that you have. And then there's the training stress that you want to load every week, right? And until your recovery. My cycles are 3 weeks and then 1 week of recovery. And so each week you increase the training stress. And that's really what you need to meet at the end of the week, right? If you're doing that by riding every day, then you definitely don't want to ride hard every day, right? That means you need to put in more time at a lower intensity to just make the training stress score, right? That you need to meet every week. If you want some more breaks in between, then that means that we plan those breaks, but that also means that we need to balance intensity and duration at different points in that week. And so, as you can hear, it's not a straight answer, right?
Yeah.
It is all based upon time availability, your goals, and how do you respond to training, right? Because we don't want to burn out. You don't want to do too much high intensity, day after day. So that's kind of how you plan the recovery days. But I think you probably should at a minimum have two days a week where you're off the bike or just pedal really slow in zone one for a short duration, right? If you have to move your legs, then that's how I would plan it.
All right. How about you, Dave?
I know it's not a straight answer, Mike, but that's the best I got there.
Yeah. How about you, Dave? How many days off are you taking?
I take Monday and Thursday. I'm off the bike, but probably not today. But generally, on those 2 days, I'll lift weights. So I often wonder if I'm taxing my body, because I'll lift on Thursday, trying to go into a Friday and Saturday, Sunday ride routine. So I completely effed up when it comes to recovery. I preach it and I talk about it and I tell people about it and then I don't practice it. You know,
I'm the same.
But you think I would learn though, because just on 2 weeks vacation, I rode a bunch in the very beginning and then I didn't ride from the last 5 days, and I came back and started riding back here after about 5 days off the bike. I felt fantastic. I felt great. You know, the first day is always a little challenging, but after that, I just felt great because I was energized. I think recovered.
Well, so the story goes on. What's the optimal? Who knows? It's different for everybody. We're all like our own unique individual entity. And, it's like one of those eternal questions, I think, for cyclists.
I'm sorry, but I know that we're pressed for time. We all have jobs, but
yep.
I don't want to geek out too much, but I'm curious if you can, Eric, just kind of for the average, because we've said it a bunch of times, zone one, zone two, there's probably a ton of people listening to us that don't understand what FTP is and don't understand the zones. If you could give us a crash course in that, and then I'd be curious as to what Erin's FTP was when she started and where she is now.
That's fine, right? So to me, training is about optimizing the energy zones that we have, right? And if we talk about energy zones, there's really three. There is like the energy zone where you're mostly burning fat. So let me just start. There are no clear delineation when what's in play, right? So when you're burning fat, you're not only burning fat, you're already using some glycogen, right? But the higher you get into your intensity or the higher you get into your zones, it switches, right? So the lowest intensity zone, you're burning fat. We as humans have plenty of that. And that's not necessarily body fat, right? But it's fats. Again, nutritionists can probably explain this better. And you can go a long time on that energy system, right? So that's usually zone two, zone three. You know, it's where your what they call lactic threshold one is, right? Where you start seeing that blood lactate is going to form. Before that zone is where you're burning fat. So then the next zone, right? So let me say that again, right? So in that energy system, you're at zone one, two, a little bit of zone three. Depends on how trained you are. Then you're going into the energy system where you start using glycogen, right? And so glycogen, you only have 90 minutes to 2 hours stored in your, you know, your mitochondria and stuff in your muscles. So there's a less amount of that energy available. So the more time you spend there, the sooner you're going to burn out, right? And that's all using oxygen, right? So now we're going all the way to VO2 max, right? So that's zone, part of zone three, zone four, zone five. That's where you mostly are burning glycogen, right? Or using glycogen. And then above that, you're neuromuscular. And that's where you only have 15 to 30 seconds of energy available, right? So that's sprinting and stuff. So now this is where a lot of people are making mistakes. They're working too fast and too much in that, you know, in those higher zones. And that's why they're, you know, running out of steam at the end of the ride. So that's just kind of from an energy perspective, the zones, right? And I think I might've said it right. So fat burning zone one, two, a little bit of three, glycogen, zone three, four, and five, and then above is where you are neuromuscular. Did I cover all the questions?
Yeah, yeah. No, I think you just touched on something huge there. You know, so many people, and I these are people that were on the shop rider, like, okay, why are you riding? And I'm, you know, oh, I'm riding because I want to lose weight, and yet they think that it's got to be all intense, right? They're going to go out and they're going to just ride as hard as they can for as long as they can, and then they go, why am I not losing weight? And I learned that a long time ago when I used to actually was actually a Stairmaster freak, right? And it's really about you're burning fat at a much, much lower level than you think. And I think that's a mistake that a lot of people make. Like, I don't understand why I'm losing weight. I don't understand why I can't lose weight.
And then from a training perspective, right, our goal is to move all these transition points, right? And we want to move them to the right. So that basically means you want to move that LT1, or where you burn mostly fat, you want to move that to a higher percentage, right? Like, we're higher power. Same thing with your FTP. FTP is that point where your lactate that you're using for energy now goes into your blood. And, you know, that's a metabolic byproduct that's ultimately going to affect how your muscles are firing, right? So because there's not enough oxygen, etc. And VO2 max, the same thing, right? Like, that's where you talk about, like, how much oxygen can you uptake, right? Like, because you need oxygen to create that energy. And so training in these different zones all have the goal of moving those transition points more to the right, right? So higher power, basically. And if you don't train in the correct zones, you're never going to improve that, right? And if you don't balance it out, you're going to get better at one particular zone, and you're losing out, or you go backwards on the other zone. So that's why you always need to have a balance of high intensity workouts and lower intensity workouts.
So Aaron's
perspective, right? Like, you asked the question, like, how much has her FTP changed? And I think when she came in, I will not give away the numbers, but she improved like 37 watts, you know, over the period that we have been training.
No shit, really.
That's a big progress. Yes.
Yeah, fantastic.
Aaron, what would you like to say about that?
I actually didn't know how much. I knew it was a decent amount, and I can feel it too. And that's what's most important to me is that I can feel it, and I feel like I'm getting stronger. So yeah, definitely worth it.
All right. Well, listen, I think we could go on and on here because there's so much when we're talking about coaching and rider development and everything. One thing that's clear. Oh, go ahead.
I think it's interesting. I think we're at another point where we've done it again. We're going to go, oh, shit, we need a part two of this. So well, we're going to have to. Yeah.
Eric's never coming back. He's had enough of our act. Okay. So, but let's wrap it up here. I want to thank both of you for joining us today. It's been super informative. Aaron, do you have any social media that you care to put out there? Or you fly under the radar? It's up to you. We always give our guests the opportunity to like, hey, if you want to follow along,
I actually don't have any social media except for LinkedIn. I'm not on social media anymore.
Beautiful.
But thank you for asking.
That's a growing trend, and that's good to see. All right, but the Diesel, he's a businessman. He's got some coaching. He's got some Zwifting. How do our listeners get involved with Dutch Diesel Cycling? What's the best way to follow along with you?
So I think the best way is to go to the website, right? www.dutchdieselcycling.com. You know, that's where you have the link to all the Zwift ride schedules. You have the link to Instagram. You have the link to Facebook. You know, I'm not very active, you know, posting to Facebook and Instagram. I, you know, like to share when I see good articles, you know, so people can kind of read up from themselves, which I think, you know, are relevant for training. So yeah, that's where people. So the website, I think, is the best starting point because it branches out to multiple channels.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much for joining us. Also, if you'd like to subscribe to Cycle Jerks Podcast, you can do so at cyclejerkspodcast.buzzsprout.com. And if you like what we're doing, please feel free to leave a nice review on Apple or any of the other streaming platforms. We are new on YouTube, so we just started posting our stuff on YouTube a few weeks ago, and we've got some people following along there as well. So thank you all. Appreciate everybody listening, and that's going to do it for today's episode. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.